You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom, first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Wednesday edition. Before the show, I was just looking at the Drudge Report, and they have a story about the dictator in North Korea, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, and the fact that the special operators, the Delta Team 6, are training in South Korea, with the possible target being the dictator in Northern Korea. Now, this is interesting, and this is another example of what I call rattling cages to send messages. And I think this is very, very counterproductive. And who is it meant for? Is it really meant for the dictator? You might say that. But I think this is another example, unfortunately, of the American people being manipulated by big lie media to prepare us for a possible attack on the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, North Korea. They're communist, and if any regime needs to fall, it's that one. It's very much a totalitarian state. But why are we talking about this? I thought President Trump ran as a non-interventionist. At least that's the impression I got. Now, I've heard people say, well, what happens is people run as candidate and then they get in the White House and then they find out a lot of things and that really changes their position. Really? Really? I don't think so. I mean, it's a nice fairy tale, and I've fallen for this. Well, the president must know something that we don't. That's the other side of this coin. People voted for Donald Trump really for two or three reasons. One, and I covered this last show, the American people believe in the rule of law, and they believe that no one, and I mean absolutely no one, is above the law, and that includes Hillary Clinton. I'm waiting for Attorney General Sessions to announce the appointment of an independent prosecutor. I might be waiting a long time. Remember all those Trump supporters? And I'm not a Trump supporter. I didn't vote for him. I didn't vote for Hillary. I didn't vote last presidential election because my two choices were big government parties. I make it a policy now. I don't vote for any party that's for big government. And if you can't balance the budget, that's the test. When have you balanced the budget lately? The answer is they haven't. It's a simple test, but it's realistic. I emphasize that because what are the American people concerned about? Are they really concerned about a dictator in North Korea that is developing missiles, is developing a nuclear capability? It's suspected he has 8 nuclear weapons. I'm suspicious of that because it takes quite an effort to miniaturize, make those weapon systems small enough, light enough, that they can go on a missile. And at any point of time, we can take out a lot of that capability by firing nuclear weapons from a submarine sitting off the coast of North Korea. And if we don't do it, don't doubt that the Japanese would if they truly felt threatened. Now, there's no love between the Koreans, South and North, and Japan, given the brutality of the Japanese Empire. And they were an imperial empire, and they treated whether it was South Korea or China, not well. They were butchers, and they were arrogant, and if we don't watch out, some would say we're already there. We will morph into a regime like that, like our military shooting civilians. Oh, they look like terrorists or a threat when they're just driving their car. Has it happened? Yes, it's happened. Those are the dangers, the consequences of an empire. We put young men, women, far away from home in a dangerous situation, and they make mistakes. They kill innocent people because they're afraid those innocent people want to kill them. They're not good policemen. We train our military to kill people and destroy things. And if we don't watch out, we'll be in the Middle East forever. I'm not putting much credence in this news report for the simple reason, let's say we do take them out. I think we could take them out anytime, any place. But first, keep in mind, it's illegal, folks. If the president orders that, he is commander-in-chief and could order it. But then you're assassinating the leadership of a nation, whether you like them or not. Last time I checked, we passed a federal law that says you can't do that. And we were doing it in the past. That's why they passed the law. And once you start playing that game, and we have been playing that game, then the president of the United States becomes fair game. And any president, Donald Trump or any American president, better remember that. More than one person can play the game. And it's not a game. It's high stakes. It's life or death. So I'm not believing this news story. And I think it's more aimed at the American people than it is at the North Korean dictator. I'm no fan of his either. And that family has been brutal to its people, but it's up to the people in that regime to overthrow that regime. And invariably, some up-and-coming, ambitious, I'll say evil, but will kill that dictator. I'm not saying his name. Now, what's getting the attention of the American people? And this is curious. What is the story, the number one story for the last, not one day, 2 days, 3 days? What is that story? And it's sort of driving me nuts because I really don't care. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is that doctor that was dragged off a United Airlines flight from Chicago to Kentucky, I believe, is where it was going to end up. Because supposedly the flight was overbooked. I'm getting conflicting reports that it wasn't overbooked. Now, I won't bore you with the details because I'm not clear on the details. But it's very apparent, what's very clear, he bought a ticket, paid for it. They boarded the flight. He was in his seat. And yes, they can take you off that flight. That is definitely the right of the airline to do that. And they use the federal government as cover for it. They overbook. Ever since 9-1-1, I've avoided airline travel completely. I'll drive by car first. I have no fear of flights. I used to fly a small plane and was in the Air Force, and I had a lot of travel on airlines. I find it boring, except it's a great way to catch up on your reading or occasionally a good movie, but primarily reading. And if you're tired, get a little rest. And it's a fast way to move from point A to B. So I understand if you're in an executive type position or a sales position where you have to do a lot of traveling, you got to put up with the rules today. And what's happened is the airlines, because of the rules, it's easy to get thrown off a flight. And again, you're going to get in the he said, she said. But I've talked to people that do fly, and what they tell me is they can't recall. I'm not saying there hasn't been more than one or two cases where it has happened, where they boarded the flight, and then after everyone boarded, had to pull four people off. Usually what they do is, and I remember the first time I was in Dallas, and I would have wasted the money anyway. I was here for a job interview, and this is the early days of Dallas-Fort Worth. This was a long time ago. And last interview was with the deputy general manager, and he was hiring me, the number two guy at the Fort Worth division of then General Dynamics. And he asked me, do you have time to go out to dinner? And I said, I'd like to, but I have a flight back. He says, well, I understand. And I had to get back to work. You know, I took a day off from work, and I was still a captain in the Air Force. Well, we'll make it another time. So I got to the airport early. Well, not early, but, you know, more than enough time. And this is before, obviously, all the security that we have today. And they offered anyone, I forget the dollar amount, I want to say $500. We'll give you $500 if you can take another flight. I didn't take the money because I had to get to work the next day. You know, I'm expected to show up if I'm in the military. Now, I could probably have made a call. And in retrospect, I should have. I should have went to dinner with the deputy general manager, and I should have taken another flight. But this was before cell phones, too. And I didn't, offhand, I don't think I had his number. But they would have come and picked me up, and I could have had dinner or and made $500. But no, I was trying to be reliable. And I did get the job, by the way. So that was my limited experience with a flight being overbooked. And that's the only time I was ever, that I'm aware of. There might have been others, I just wasn't paying attention. But apparently, airlines routinely overbook flights, and the reason is they know a certain percentage won't show up for various reasons. Change of travel plans. And because of that, they will offer money, and it's the maximum that I understand is $1,350, but that's more or less, that's the number if they really want to. Let's say you want to negotiate, and I do. I enjoy doing that. You know, they might say $300, and they probably get some takers, $500. Now, what you got to understand, most of the people on the flight, like me, need to get back to work, or they're expected to be someplace, and they got to make connections. That's the other thing to keep in mind. So a large percentage of the people on the passengers, the airlines know that, and you should know that. It's not that if you offer them a lot of money, they won't take it. That's true. But for a couple of $100, most people, inconvenience, and that's what we're talking about, is not worth it. But people know that they can go higher. And I was hearing someone called in about they were relaying a story where they were going on vacation, but their plans were flexible. And this is an airline route where the plane is usually full. And it's rather routine. And they went right to the $1,350. We'll give you $1,350. And they might throw in a hotel room and other goodies. And he held out. And I forget the number, but it was a couple thousand dollars. The next day, it happened again. And to make a long story short, I think the total, they got up to about $10,000, and then they canceled their plans. They were going to go on vacation, I don't know where, and they played the system and ended up with some $10,000. Now, I'm sure there were many people on both those flights that would have taken the $10,000, but it's worth it to the airline. You got to understand that every seat has a different price on that airplane, including, you know, first class. Now, when I was in the military, I did fly once first class. I was in uniform. I was a first lieutenant, and I usually went from Dayton, Ohio to St. Louis, St. Louis to Dayton, Ohio. That was the primary, because I was on the F-15 program, and I went to the McDonnell Douglas facility where they were building the F-15s. They were also building or repairing or upgrading F-4s, and later they had the Hornets. And it's right at the airport. It's on the other side of the airport. And their headquarters were there. Now that company was bought out by Boeing. They're part of Boeing now. But they're still building military aircraft. And it's a short flight. I would say an hour and a half. And it's not a very long flight from Dayton, Ohio to St. Louis, Missouri. But the airline hostess, I don't know what they're called, attendant. They used to be called stewardesses. I think that is passé. I am really dating myself. Sir, would you like to be in first class? I said, fine, as long as I don't have to pay for it. No problem. We have some empty seats. First and only time in first class. Now today, if I had a job where I had to do a lot of travel, I would insist it be first class. I don't want to put up with the small, cramped seats, especially on long flights. But I'm digressing here. What I'm taking away from all this conversation, and it's a very important point, you need to train people, especially if this is a normal situation. And apparently, it is a normal situation, as what is the proper procedures, protocol to follow when a flight is overbooked. And again, most of the people I've talked to and heard about said they can't recall another situation where they boarded the flight. Usually, if it's overbooked, they deal with that outside of the airplane. That's been my experience, too. They only board the flight when they've reconciled any problems like that or adjudicated the problems. So that's the first thing that's unusual. Why did they board the plane? Now, before you jump on the person at the gate that's responsible for this, I assume that they knew they had enough seats. And that's subsequently coming out that the plane wasn't overbooked. what was the necessity of them having to offer four people to deplane? That's what we're talking about. Egress the aircraft. Get off the aircraft. Apparently, this was very last minute. You had four pilots that had to get somewhere to fly aircraft. And that was why. That was the motivation. At least that's what we understand the story is. Makes sense to me. At the very last minute, the plane is about ready to taxi to the runway, take off. At the very last minute, they find out they have four pilots that have to get to a destination, and this is the plane that can take them. That's a good situation, because that means if you're a passenger and want some money, and three of the people on that plane took the money, is my understanding. One was a doctor that had to get back to Kentucky, and he had some past history, and I'm not going to get into that because it is irrelevant what his past history is. Let's say he had some legal issues, had lost his license because of it, but that's irrelevant. He got his license back, and I know what he's thinking. I have appointments tomorrow, and I got to be there. I earn my living by providing a service to patients. I paid for the ticket. I'm sitting in the plane ready to take off, and they tell me I'm the unlucky one that has been chosen. Now, supposedly, they selected him randomly. In other words, no human being picked him. And that makes sense. You don't want to open yourself, well, you picked him because he looked like he was an Islamic terrorist, so get him off the plane. And supposedly in this case, it could have been that. Now, there's something that has not gotten a lot of attention, but there are some reports. And the reason I'm going over this is a hot video. I haven't, ladies and gentlemen, I've seen just a bit of it. I haven't seen the entire video. As a matter of fact, I've stayed away from this story. But I'm using this as a lead-in for something else. Police officers, you don't use police officers to settle a civil matter, a civil dispute. And this is a dispute between who? The airline and its agents, the flight attendants, and the passenger. And the passengers say, listen, I paid for it. You boarded me. Now at the last minute, you're telling me I have to get off the plane. And he said, no, I'm not. Now keep in mind, at any time, the pilot, the commander of that flight, can order anyone off the plane. He's responsible for the safety of all those passengers. From what I can determine, pilot wasn't involved. Now, understandably, because now they're locked up in the cockpit because they're afraid of someone trying to force entry into the cockpit. So the stewardess, flight attendant, called the local police, and they dragged the person off. He didn't go willingly. He resisted, and they dragged him off the plane. If you listen to some policemen, they will say, if that policeman was properly trained, he shouldn't have been involved with this. Now, it's quite different if that passenger was, let's say, disruptive. Then it's legitimate for the police to come on and take him off the plane, and if that means drag him, fine. But the police officer interjected himself, at least initially, into what was a civil matter. And once they did that, and apparently he did not follow the procedures, I don't know what the procedures are, and the policeman has a problem right now, but I think the police department has a problem. They got to show that those police officers were trained. Any department can say, well, here are our procedures, but have you had training? Have you trained your people? How often is that training? I'm not deciding an issue here. This incident needs to be reviewed. This will be a case study at the Harvard Business School, how not to handle a situation, and where procedures, at both for the person at the gate, the airline attendants, the pilot, the police officers, they have to review the whole thing, and it will be reviewed. And supposedly this doctor is now well lawyered up. This case will never go to trial. He has sort of won the lottery. He's going to be asking for a lot of money from United Airlines because this is a public relations nightmare. Compounding the problem is the chief executive officer of the airline prepared a statement, in essence, backing his people. I guess they haven't heard the customer comes first. The customer's always right. He's gotten that message now. This is not well handled, and apparently the stock of United Airlines has taken a big hit. It should take a big hit. And I'm sure a lot of people are saying, I'm not going to fly United. The friendly skies of United, I think that was their tagline many years ago. And I had a friend that routinely dated a flight attendant based in Chicago when I was at grad school. Wherever you have human beings, you can have conflicts, and they need to be resolved quickly and satisfactory to everybody. In retrospect, and I'm not trying to be a Monday morning quarterback, and it seems to me an obvious solution, especially when you're talking four pilots, could be a flight engineer, but people that have to take another airline to another destination, they have to be in Kentucky. You offer all the passengers. We need, and the issue here was one seat. They were down. They needed one passionate volunteer. They should have offered money. Ladies and gentlemen, we have four pilots that have to get to a destination. We need one passenger to volunteer. And here's what we're going to do. We'll start at $1,000. And if there are any volunteers, if there's one volunteer, that person will get $1,000 and he'll have to exit. If you exit the plane, we'll give you $1,000. And I'd make it cash or definitely a check, whatever. Now, let's say you don't get any volunteers. Ladies and gentlemen, no one has volunteered. We will offer $1,100. Do we have any takers? The idea being you gradually ratchet up. At some point, you're going to get probably two or three. And you take the three aside and go slightly down. Because one or more will. That's just a suggestion, folks. I don't know if that's the best way to handle it. But the point I'm trying to make is you need to train your people and retrain your people. Whether it's the flight attendant, the captain of the aircraft, the person at the gate, or the police officer. I was in a business where you focused on the client. The client did come first. And there were many times where I knew the client was being totally unreasonable, very demanding, and in some cases I had to tell them no. But I always remember the rule, the client's always right. You got to communicate, you got to be honest, and you really have to take a long point of view. And that's my second point. You can't just look at the revenue of a specific transaction. I'm sure the chief executive officer of this company is sort of banging his head against the wall in the damage, the long-term damage, and there will be damage to the reputation of his airline. He wasn't helping matters. Now he's changed his tune real quick, and I'm sure they've called in some consultants and said, you're handling this so poorly that you might not have a job. You need to quickly turn this whole situation around, and they will settle quickly, because if they bring in this in the court, they run the risk of, first of all, a class action suit, where instead of one instance, you're going to have many. So the doctor has hit the jackpot, the lottery, but his reputation was damaged. He didn't need the publicity, and again, that's the newspapers, digging dirt, leverage, but that's irrelevant in court. As a matter of fact, they'll rule that out. Whatever his run-in and mistakes that he's made. People make mistakes all the time. There were a series of mistakes here. Initially small mistakes that now have become a huge mistake. So how you handle a situation is critical, and that depends on training, well-thought-out policies, and taking a long point of view. In retrospect, they probably would have offered him tens of thousands of dollars to make this go away. I think he'll end up with a large settlement. I think we're talking seven, maybe eight figures, at least seven figures. Now, the lawyers will get a chunk of that, probably a third or more. And yeah, he does have some legal issue, but if the police officer was not following procedures, this guy could have two jackpots. He could sue the police department for not following their procedures. And you have discovery where his attorneys will examine not only the procedures but past cases. And I bet there's some horror stories that have not surfaced but now might surface. This is giving the industry a big black eye, and it also is giving the specific company. And it causes damage to the industry. Does this encourage me to hop on an airline today? No. Now, I can remember, I used to go skiing. Not a lot, but we'd go to Dallas to Denver and Denver to whatever ski resort. And I can remember vividly. And this happened on one occasion. What happened is we had a snowstorm in. There was a snowstorm in Denver. So the flights couldn't get in. So the flight I was booked on was canceled. Understandable if they can't fly in. But they had loaded the plane with my luggage. So the next day, I tried to get on same airline, and they were overbooked because you had several flights now trying to get out, and they're trying to go to the same place. But my luggage had gone to Denver. It was sitting in the Denver airport, the old Denver airport. I think it's Stapleton. But the person taking the ticket said, why don't you try Frontier? Now, if you know the Dallas Fort Worth airport, I had to go to another terminal. I got lucky. They had room. I've never flown Frontier. I did that day. And I got out of Dallas to Denver. I'm sure a lot of people that were trying to go from Dallas to Denver didn't get on. They weren't. But I already lost one full day of skiing is how I looked at it. Didn't have to get to work. So the person taking the ticket was trying to be helpful. I was not happy with the airline. I won't mention the name. I know who the airline is. I was mad. Now, the first time, I understand that. Weather, there's nothing they can do about it. If they can't get permission to land, they're going to cancel the flight. Second day, I understood it. Intellectually, I understood the problem. But I don't take many vacations. And this one, I wanted to ski. And it had snow. Too much snow. Bottom line, I got there. And I only missed one day of skiing. And the biggest problem was, yes, the luggage. It must have taken me an hour looking to finally discover where the luggage is. I went to the person in charge of that. He says, listen, you can see, and I could see it. Luggage was everywhere. They didn't have room. It was stacked up. I can tell you generally where it's at. You're going to have to find it because I'm just one person here. And after about 30, 40 minutes, I found my luggage. I think I had two suitcases. I was lucky. And then I had to find a ride to the ski resort. That was fairly easy to do. Now, I tell you that story because I can't use the phrase, but stuff happens. Stuff happens. And you got to roll with the punches, flow with it, and deal with the situation. Don't start screaming, yelling. Do you know who I am? That's the favorite one. Do you know who I am? No, I don't know who you are. And you're obnoxious, though, and loud. I always get a kick of that because invariably somebody thinks they're very, very important and should be treated special. That's what they're saying. I'm important and I'm special and I should be the number one priority of you. You got the message? And there are people like that. I have a word for it. Starts with an A, A-H. But what's interesting is the reaction of all the people and the fact that this story keeps going on and on. They're still on talk radio. It's the talk of the internet. And it's interesting hearing some of the people's reactions. It's the police state that's doing it. You can blame it on anyone you want. See, I would approach it differently. This is an opportunity. Is this an opportunity I should take advantage of? I'm willing to bet there were a few people on that flight. I don't know how many, what plane it was, how many passengers it carried. But I'm willing to bet 3 to 5%. If the price was right, and I would say $1,000, $1,350 if you want to go to the map, they could have found that fourth person and avoided all this negative publicity. That's going to be cheap compared to, let's say, $1 million settlement, even with insurance to cover something like this. You got to do the right thing. I guess that's the final takeaway. Do the right thing. And you got to train your people to do the right thing. And customers are important. But you get an attitude, and I'm sure it's true in the airline industry. They don't have a relationship attitude. They have a transaction attitude. And that's deadly because then you get situations like this. If you have a relationship attitude, you take the long view. These people, if I give them a good experience, might be so loyal to my airline that they will come back again and again and again. Conversely, if you don't do the right thing, don't treat people right, and they see what happens here, they don't want to fly with you again. They won't believe your ads. You've destroyed any loyalty or goodwill you've had. I got the message that I have to wrap it up. So we have a number of stories in the news. This is by far, in my mind, wasn't an important story as a news story. And I believe you me, if this story went away in one day, I would never mention it. But I thought, what can we learn from it? And I think we can learn an awful lot. And I think a lot of people now are regretting having a short-sighted attitude. And it always comes back treating people right, treating people like you would like to be treated, doing the right thing. And to do that, yes, people have to be trained. Don't assume they know what it is. Many people do, but many other people don't know what the right thing is. This was obviously handled very poorly, and I think it'll be in the news tomorrow because I'm getting sick of it, but it's on talk radio, morning, noon, and tonight. Now, there are other stories, and what's going to happen, there'll be a news story, and there were several I could have covered, and I'll cover tomorrow. I will definitely tomorrow cover economic stagnation and what we need to do about it. Thank you for listening, and now, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.